Public testimony is wrapping up for the week in the House Intelligence Committee's impeachment inquiry of President Trump. Two more witnesses were called today, including Ukraine Embassy political counselor David Holmes and the White House's former advisor on Russia, Fiona Hill. In her opening remarks, Hill went after Republicans who say claims that Russia interfered in the 2016 presidential election have been overstated.
Based on questions and statements I've heard, some of you on this committee appear to believe that Russia and its security services did not conduct a campaign against our country, and that perhaps, somehow, for some reason, Ukraine did. This is a fictional narrative that has been perpetrated and propagated by the Russian security services themselves. The unfortunate truth is that Russia was the foreign power that systematically attacked our democratic institutions in 2016.
Nine witnesses testified this week in the hearings. Barbara McQuaid is a professor at the University of Michigan Law School and former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. Barb, thanks for joining us again today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
A lot of twists and turns over the week, but big picture, what have you taken away from what we've seen in these public hearings?
I think it has come into focus that there was absolutely a quid pro quo here, whatever you want to call it. There was an effort to negotiate from Ukraine an agreement to investigate, or at least publicly announce that they were investigating Joe Biden and the 2016 presidential election in exchange for military aid and a White House meeting. Whether you want to call it quid pro quo, whether you want to call it something else, it is apparent that that's what's going on. That's what Rudy Giuliani was negotiating, and that's what President Trump wanted. That's why the military aid was held up. And so I think the question now is, acknowledging those facts, what is the proper remedy, if any, that should go forward? I think that when members of Congress persist in trying to discredit these witnesses who are neutral public servants, they really only make the case worse for President Trump, because it suggests that if you believe them, what he did must be so bad that you must impeach.
I want to give a listen to a couple different parts of Gordon Sondland's testimony, the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, very much at the center of the whole story. Here, and getting to this quid pro quo element, here's a clip from Sondland's opening statement.
I know that members of this committee frequently frame these complicated issues in the form of a simple question. Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes.
Okay, a big moment there. But Sondland later described a phone call he had with President Trump in which the president said he didn't want a quid pro quo. Here's a listen to that.
But I believe I just asked him an open-ended question, Mr. Chairman. What do you want from Ukraine? I keep hearing all these different ideas and theories and this and that. What do you want? And it was a very short, abrupt conversation. He was not in a good mood. And he just said, I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky to do the right thing. Something to that effect.
Okay, now a lot of people focus on the first one there, saying, yes, he's saying there's a quid pro quo. The president and his supporters saying, wait a minute, there's Sondland saying the president said, no, I don't want that. How do you sort that out?
Well, I think you have to look at all of the evidence, not just the testimony of Gordon Sondland, but of all of the evidence, including President Trump's own phone call with President Zelensky of Ukraine, in which he says, upon being asked about the military aid, he says, I need you to do me a favor, though, and then proceeds to ask about the investigations. I think that piece of it. I think the other evidence about what Rudy Giuliani was doing, I think you have to look at. I also think you have to look at the timing of that September 9th phone call when President Trump says, no quid pro quo. It's a really interesting conversation. This conversation comes the day after the whistleblower complaint is filed. It also comes when Bill Taylor has text messaged Gordon Sondland to say, are you telling me that we are conditioning military aid on a political campaign? It is after that when Sondland says, what do you want me to say to these people? That President Trump says no quid pro quo. He offers it unsolicited. When you say, what do you want me to tell Ukraine? To say no quid pro quo sounds like he's playing defense to me. And so among the things you have to assess about that is, what was the motivation of the speaker? And at that point, I think he was playing defense and concerned that Bill Taylor was about to blow the whistle along with this whistleblower.
Talking to Barbara McQuaid from the University of Michigan Law School, looking at the latest in impeachment hearings. And we played that bit from Fiona Hill, former advisor, White House advisor on Russia, talking about really one of the two investigations that the president talked about in that phone call semi-transcript. A lot of people, we focused a lot on the Burisma and Joe Biden side of that, but also looking back at the 2016 election and the claim that there was a lot of Ukrainian meddling in the United States election, not so much Russian meddling, and Fiona Hill very much attacking that idea. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more powerful moments of the whole 2 weeks when she said, essentially, there are people in this room who believe that it was Ukraine and not Russia that interfered with our election. That's a false narrative. That's disinformation. When you say those things, you make our country less safe. And I thought hearing that from someone like Fiona Hill, who is a neutral career professional, saying that was an incredibly powerful moment. It's not partisan politics. These are facts. And she is someone who cares deeply about our country's national security and foreign policy. For her to say that was very powerful. It struck me as a very stark contrast to the testimony of Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller was also a neutral witness, but I thought that he was neutral to a fault. And in places where he could have said things in a very powerful way, similar to what Fiona Hill did today, he worked very hard to not read the report, to defer to members of Congress, to refer to the written record. And I think in that way, missed an opportunity to provide compelling information that caught the attention of the American public.
I want to listen to Devin Nunes, the top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee. In his opening remarks today, he said foreign aid gets withheld temporarily for a variety of reasons and made the case that the president hadn't done anything wrong. Here's a listen.
The Democrats have tried to solve this dilemma with a simple slogan. He got caught. President Trump, we are to believe, was just about to do something wrong, and getting caught was the only reason he backed down from whatever nefarious thought crime. The Democrats are accusing him of almost committing. I once again urge Americans to continue to consider the credibility of the Democrats on this committee who are now hurling these charges. For the last 3 years, it's not President Trump who got caught. It's the Democrats who got caught.
And that fits in with what some other Republicans have been saying on the committees, saying eventually the aid to Ukraine was released. There was no announcement of investigation from Ukrainian leaders. No harm, no foul, in effect, Barb.
Yeah, that's just utter nonsense. I can remember a time when the Republican Party cared about the rule of law and law enforcement and the law. Bribery is defined as demanding a thing of value in exchange for the performance of an official act. The crime is complete upon the demand. When President Trump said in that phone call on July 25th, "I want you to do us a favor," though, he made a demand, and the crime was done then. It didn't require the withholding of the aid. It didn't require the agreement or the announcement of investigations. The crime was committed the moment he made the demand. And the reason for that is when he makes a demand like that, he harms our national security. He withheld the aid that was needed for Ukraine to protect our national security, in addition to the national security of Ukraine, from Russian aggression. He also harmed our credibility around the world with our allies by failing to fulfill a promise to turn over aid unless they agreed to play ball with us. And he also harmed the integrity of the United States as a crusader against corruption by engaging in corrupt activity himself. So the crime is not a thought crime. The crime was committed when he demanded. That's the actus reus of bribery, and he did it. It constitutes a completed crime.
As you mentioned, the question, if people agree with that argument, is does it rise to an impeachable offense? And things like high crimes and misdemeanors is in the eye of the beholder in some cases. What does it take then to translate this series of actions to does it rise to the level of impeachment?
Absolutely. And I'm frustrated that the Republicans have dragged 2 weeks of testimony, dragged us through 2 weeks of testimony to get to the point where we now finally understand what the facts are. Because the real debate that we should be having is this an impeachable offense? And I think reasonable minds can disagree about that. Now, I could make an argument why it's a very serious crime or misdemeanor, bribery, as I've just articulated, the harm that the United States suffered. But I think someone could also make the other argument that perhaps there's other reasons, harm to the country, that perhaps we don't want to go down that road. You know, when a prosecutor decides whether to file charges, the first question that's asked is, was a crime committed? And that's only the first step. And here, I think the answer is quite clearly yes. But there's a second part of that inquiry. A prosecutor says, is there a substantial federal interest that can be advanced by filing criminal charges? And similarly, with impeachment, I think the question needs to be asked is it in the best interest of the country to file articles of impeachment? On the one hand, a reason to say yes is that the harm that has been suffered by the country, and if you don't, you risk setting a standard for every president that comes forward from this point on to be able to say, well, Trump got away with it. I shouldn't be held to a higher standard than he is. On the other hand, you could look at the collateral consequences of an impeachment. There is the time and the resources that it will expend from Congress on things they're not going to get to, like health care and gun control and other things that might be important to constituents. There are other collateral consequences, the harm that this might have with our allies around the world or our reputation around the world. Those are the serious things that members of Congress should be considering on the impeachment question, not whether there was or wasn't a quid pro quo. It quite obviously was, and I wish they would stop having petty arguments that it didn't.
We're talking about what happened this week during the Trump impeachment inquiry hearings with Barbara McQuaid, law professor at the University of Michigan, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your takeaways from the different testimonies this week? Who stood out to you if you've been watching or listening? Do you think the House votes to impeach President Trump? If they do that, should the Senate convict or not? Should they proceed with removing him from office or not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with University of Michigan law professor and former U.S. Attorney Barbara McQuaid, looking at the latest, the Trump impeachment inquiry hearings. You can join in with your thoughts and reactions at 800-642-1234. We'll go right to your calls now. Sid is with us in Milwaukee. Sid, hi.
Hey, so I just have two things to say. One is, you know, regardless of whatever these proceedings yearn, it's going to be an outcome of, you know, the Senate's not going to impeach him. So that's one thing. It is clearly a waste of time. But in addition, like, I don't know, it seems like the left clearly thinks that they solely understand morality, and they call, you know, it just seems like it doesn't seem right that how stern they are in their notion of morality and like just cockiness about it. I don't know.
Sid, thanks for the call. His first point there, Barbara, what's the point if almost certainly the Senate, Republican-dominated Senate, won't remove the president from office?
Yeah, I think there's a political point to be made there and a legal point to be made there. So politically, I think he's right. If the Senate members are not going to vote by 2/3, which is a, you know, supermajority to convict, is there political damage that is done to the Democratic Party? Does it have consequences for the election? Is it not only a waste of time, but counterproductive politically? And I think that's a calculus that members of both parties have to keep in mind, how it affects them politically. But I would hope that members of Congress have a higher duty to think about what is their duty as a check and balance in their oversight role of the presidency. If every time they say, well, he's not going to be removed from office anyway, so what's the point? How much more egregious does the behavior allow to happen if we allow there to be no consequence for misconduct? One of the reasons that we charge people with crimes under the law is for deterrence. And so I think that President Trump cares very much about his place in history. And I think a decision to impeach him, even if it ultimately results in no removal from office, does have some consequence because it sends a message that this behavior is not acceptable. And that if future presidents try to solicit foreign interference in our elections, it can be held up as a moment in history when Congress said this is unacceptable.
Sid, thanks for your call. We'll go to Marcus now in Madison. Marcus, hi.
Yes, thank you. Two quick points and a question for Professor McQuaid. Number one, in my opinion, the Democrats get absolutely no credit for any kind of righteousness in this. These are basically procedural crimes against the Congress, and they overlooked Trump's war crimes, fomenting domestic violence, his emoluments crimes, children in concentration camps. That doesn't affect anybody. But number two is right-wing radio, which is mostly owned by CBS, 85% of AM radio is owned by CBS, is re-spinning these hearings 24 hours a day, using every false argument in the book, Limbaugh, Levin, Hannity, pounding away, begging the question, non sequitur, after red herring.
Gotcha. Marcus, I want to jump in. And Barbara, we in many ways have a couple different realities going on depending on which part of the media landscape we focus on.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, I think we ought to have a yearning for the facts. And one of the things that I think is useful about the public hearings is we get to see them unfiltered. Certainly there is spin that occurs after the hearings occur, but while they're going on, the public gets to see for themselves what these public servants have to say. And, you know, we saw people like Fiona Hill and David Holmes today. These are people who have served in multiple administrations. They're not political actors. I think one of the real harms of the current age and the polarization of our media and our social media is there's this assumption, I think, by the public that the whole world divides into red and blue camps. And that's just not the case. So many people in public service have served in multiple administrations and are trying to present the facts. So regardless of whether this hurts the Democrats or helps the Democrats, or I think they don't care. I think what they say is this is harmful to our national security. These facts should be out there so that we can make a thoughtful decision about whether this is the way we want to conduct our government.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Barbara McQuaid from the University of Michigan Law School, looking at the latest in impeachment inquiry hearings. Back to your calls now. Michael is with us in Barron. Michael, hi.
Hi. I read somewhere that the Senate sometimes does, I believe they're called secret votes or anonymous votes. I'm wondering why the Senate does not opt to use that option.
Michael, thanks for the call. I don't know if Senate procedure is up your alley. Barb, do you know how that might work if a secret ballot, anonymous ballot, might work for an impeachment vote?
I don't, and it's a fascinating question because I have heard reports said that if it were secret, that there are a number of Republicans who would vote to convict President Trump, but that they don't dare because of the political ramifications. I don't know if that's true or not, but a secret ballot would help solve that problem. I don't know if they can or can't. One of the interesting things is that the Constitution is very quiet on the matter of impeachment. It just says that the House has the sole power of impeachment, and it says that the Senate shall be the trier of fact and will decide whether to remove the president from office. It doesn't really give any details about how they are to go about their work, and so they are permitted to create their own rules about how they're going to conduct things. On the one hand, I could see an argument that it should be public, it should be transparent, everyone should know how people came out. On the other hand, the way people vote in elections, the way jurors vote, is all secret and in a black box. And so I think you could make compelling arguments on both sides of that question, and I think it's a fascinating idea.
Let's bring on one more caller. Gene is with us in Richland County. Gene, hi.
Howdy. I have a two-part question, I guess, and I was listening to people talking before me. It was kind of already hit on the part where the Democrats, they think that they have this idea of what's right and wrong, and it's often always skewed, and they often jump the gun, as they always do. And you can often see them where they'll sit there and make this big mountain of evidence, and it turns out like the Steele dossier and things as such. And then the double standard that your guest is talking about, you know, how Trump's this, Trump that. But what about the double standard where often our country does withhold aid to before they get an understanding of what's going to happen when it's given?
Gene, thanks for that call. Let's tackle that second point in our little bit of time left, Barb. This is we do put conditions on our aid to other countries. This is just that, Gene's saying.
We do all the time, but the difference is that conditions are put on aid when they are in the best interest of our country. Those are perfectly legitimate. If we were to withhold aid and say, before we give you this aid, we want to make sure that you have a good anti-corruption program. We want to make sure that you're doing these things so that the money doesn't get squandered and spent in inappropriate ways. Perfectly appropriate, and that what we should be doing as good stewards of our taxpayer dollars. That's not what President Trump is accused of doing here. President Trump is accused here of withholding the aid for his personal political agenda. The only thing he wanted, according to Gordon Sondland, was an announcement that there was an investigation into Joe Biden and into the 2016 election interference. He didn't even want the investigations to occur. In fact, he just wanted an announcement, because an announcement would allow him to have a talking point to smear his political opponents. That is a very different thing from acting in the best interest of the nation in spending taxpayer dollars and acting in the best political interest of the individual. In this way, President Trump has put his personal interests above the interests of his country, and I submit is an abuse of power for which impeachment is appropriate.
Gene, thanks for the call, and Barb, thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks very much for having me.
That's Barbara McQuaid, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. She joined us for a look at the latest in impeachment inquiry hearings. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. You can help. We want advice for people hosting their first ever Thanksgiving dinner. Tell us what works for you, what's gone wrong, and how you manage the big meal. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time.